Hello, and welcome to Outnumber the Podcast. I'm Bonnie.
And I'm Audrey, and we're homeschooling moms to a combined total of 18 children.
We know firsthand that motherhood is full of crazy chaos and overwhelming obligations, but it should also be full of love and laughter.
Regardless of where you are on your journey, come join us as we work together to find joy in the chaos of motherhood.
Hello, and welcome back to Outnumber the Podcast. We are on episode number 36, and today we have an awesome interview planned for you guys with Melissa Esplin. She is an amazing artist, a beautiful calligrapher, and just a very hilarious person. And I've one of my favorite blog friends who I've actually met in real life, so we are excited to have her today. So welcome, Melissa.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here. I love your podcast, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
just good stories, good advice. And I just feel so much better about, like, oh, okay, I'm not alone. This is all just, like, kind of madness, right?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. We're all in it together. And, you know, we usually read a review, but we're just going to leave it at that. Thank you for your review.
Perfect. We also do a funny mom moment. So do you have anything to share?
Okay. I was trying to think of, like, a good story about Felix, because we're going to talk about Felix. But the best story that I have is about Penelope, my oldest. She's 11 now. We were headed up to Oregon to visit my husband's grandparents. His grandpa had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So it was like, okay, we got to say goodbye. We need, like, this is our chance. What should have taken 14 hours ended up taking over 20. Because the kids got some gut something.
No.
It was horrific. Like, we were driving through, like, the pasture lands of Idaho, seeing all these cows and thinking, wow, these cows smell so bad. No, it was Felix and Penelope. And so, like, we were stopping constantly to just change the diapers, and, like, that was a whole mess. Then a couple days later, like, they'd kind of worked it out of their system. We were headed home, and from Portland to Salt Lake, there's this place. I don't even know what highway it's called, but you're kind of going through a canyon, and for about 15 to 20 minutes, there are no shoulders. There are no exits. So you're just kind of stuck on the freeway. You just have to keep going. And Penelope just kind of groans from the back seat. She was probably like 4 or 5 at this point. And she's like, Mom, I'm going to be sick. I'm like, oh, dang it. So I hand back this little bucket. I thought it was going to be super clever and, like, Pinterest mommy and have, like, these buckets with toys and treats in them. No, they were for the puke and the poo. It was, yeah. So anyway, like, I passed the bucket back to her. I'm like, just keep it in the bucket. Whatever you do, just keep it in the bucket. And I kind of forgot because she was quiet. And like 5 minutes later, I hear, okay, I feel much better now. I'm like, wait, you didn't puke. What? She passes back this little bucket with a perfectly formed turd. And so it's potty talk at our house. Anyway, but, like, she had loosened her seatbelt just enough to put this little bucket underneath her bum, pull down her pants, and go to the bathroom. No spills. And after the drive up, we're like, wait, really? Like, we just busted out laughing so hard. It was just, like, kid win, parent win, just so unexpected and hilarious. So that was,
I would have been so dang proud of her.
Seriously. I think that's one of the best things she's done.
Oh, hilarious. Oh, she knew what needed to be done. She took care of it. Good girl.
Yeah, she did. And that's kind of who she is. She's a really independent kid who just solves her problems.
That's one of those stories that'll get passed on the rest of her life.
Oh, 100%.
Wedding dinner. 100%. Talk about it at the wedding dinner. Maybe after the eating.
Yes, maybe. If the guests are lucky. We're so bad about, like, potty talk. Listening to your manners episode, I'm like, oh, I could do so much better.
I think we all could. Potty talk. What is it with kids and potty talk anyway?
It's just so great.
I know. Okay, so we want to start off today by having you tell us a little bit about your family. So what's it look like? And let us in.
So my husband's name is Chris. We've been married for 13 years. And we met in college. He was buddies with my roommate. And he was actually flirting with our other roommate. And then turns out we ended up dating and getting married, and within like 7 months of us really dating. We have 3 kids. Penelope's 11, Felix is 8, and June is almost 5. And I'm kind of freaking out. My little baby, my little mini me, is growing up. So my oldest, she's kind of like our little Spitfire. She is a duplicate of my sister, who was like very stubborn and strong-willed and just kind of fiery. And so I'm like, oh, okay. If I need to ask for advice, I'll just ask my sister. It's actually been kind of perfect. Felix, he is just like, he's a hugger or he's a whiner. He's like not anything in between. He's like, can be the sweetest kid, but he's also just whines a ton. But he's adorable. He's in third grade and he's got special needs. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But he loves his superheroes. And then there's June, who, she's me. She's like a carbon copy of me. She loves to dance. She flits around the house. She sings these little songs. She draws. She like crafts. She loves doing dress ups. Like, she's me, and for better or for worse. And yeah, that's kind of our family. My husband works a regular 9-to-5. He didn't used to, which we're all kind of lamenting that at the moment. And then I work from home, just trying to shift focus to be more of a present mom. Summer just really kind of makes that glaring, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, all right. Work is not important. Kids are more important. I'm going to just sit down and shut my brain off for a few seconds and not feel the guilt or burden of what I am leaving undone. So that's a little bit of our life. We're really loud. I'm sure if anybody walks past our house, they will just hear us yelling constantly. And it's like, it's not because we're always upset. It's just because we always yell.
Sounds actually kind of fun.
So
I don't know. I haven't been to a quiet house that has a lot of fun yet.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. So we're loud. We like music and dance parties and eating lots of food and ice cream. And that's us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, invite us over.
Yeah.
I'll take an ice cream dance party any day.
Yeah. I'll make you food too. I'll make you some focaccia bread.
Yum.
We'll make your volume level triple.
Yes. Good. Good. Good.
So we like to ask all of our interviewees, what is your biggest weakness as a mother?
All of them. You know, it's just, it's so easy to feel inadequate. Yeah. And I try not to let those feelings of inadequacy overwhelm me. But truly, honestly speaking, I think my biggest weakness is just, I really have no chill with my kids. Like, go put your socks away. Go put your socks away. Go put your socks away. Like, they're like, I'm just constantly like, okay, you can't hear me. I've got to just like ramp things up. And I'm always just like talking loud and I have no chill. So patience and like calmly talking to my kids is something I would love to hone. But I definitely struggle with that a lot.
Yeah, that is totally relatable. But then again, something I tell myself is like, that's the real me, right? They wouldn't, if I was very calm and quiet, they would probably have a heart attack because mom wasn't being mom.
Right. Yeah.
I had a funny experience like that recently. Actually, I channeled all my inner zen and had a very, very calm confrontation with my kid where I told him what he was doing wasn't correct or whatever. Uh-huh. And he looked at me like I had grown a second head. Yeah. Like, you're not going to yell? I'm like, oh, look at this. He doesn't know what to do. Mixing it up.
Throwing you a curveball there.
That's right. That's right. You never know what's coming. Okay. So in contrast to that, we do like to follow it up with the question of what's your biggest strength? Because we all know we have something good, something that we're good at.
I feel like I'm kind of queen of the last minute. Like, I can really crush last minute stuff. You know, that's motherhood. You wake up, yeah. Your kids say, I forgot something. You're like, okay, you forgot that you volunteered to bring cupcakes to school. This would have been nice last night or 2 days ago when I was actually at the grocery store. But you know what? We'll make it work.
That's awesome.
So that I feel like as a mother, I'm queen of the make it work moment with those last minute things.
Oh, yeah. That is a huge skill. And I would like you to come teach it to me so I don't have a meltdown. So I just, you know, get in gear fast because that happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of have had to become more that way where we live. We live literally on top of a mountain. And I say that, and I don't think most people understand when I say that, no, I really live literally on top of a mountain. And so it's like a 20-minute drive to the grocery store. So there's no like, I mean, eating out, it takes more effort to eat out than it does for me to make food.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like because we've lived in this house for 7 years, we'll probably die in this house. Like, you just kind of have to, okay, well, what can we substitute? Let's see. Can you substitute coconut oil for lard? Maybe? I don't know.
See, I'm good at that anyway, just because I'm so darn lazy. I'm like, let's see. Take three toddlers to the store. Or nope, we're going to figure it out. Yep, not doing that.
You can relate. That's life.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that your middle child, Felix, has some special needs, and I'm super excited to get into this with you. When I was in college, one of my minors was special education, and I spent a lot of time working with kids in the special needs community, and so I'm super excited to find out more about Felix. Can you tell us more about him and his needs?
Okay, first of all, I have to say that I've always liked you so much. But I feel like I like you even more now. Like, my heart just like, oh, yes.
Okay. One of my favorite jobs ever was I was a nanny for one summer for a little girl that had Angelman syndrome. It's either chromosomal abnormality or missing the 15th chromosome. And so her age, mental age was like 18 months was the max that anybody with Angelman syndrome ever reaches. So I was her nanny and mom's helper, and it was like my favorite job ever. She was the best.
I mean, because you get like a perma 18-month-old.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard, but it comes with its benefits for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her name was Melissa.
Oh.
Anyway, back to Felix. Tell us about Felix.
Felix, so he is 8 years old. He's the size of a 10-year-old, but developmentally he's about 4. And we don't have a diagnosis, which is a bit of a sore spot at times. But basically he has a global severe developmental delay, and it just takes him so much longer to learn those milestones that you take for granted. Like, for example, kids naturally cover their face. It's a protection mechanism. So if you were to throw a ball at them, their hands are going to naturally, as a reflex, come up to their face. His don't. So he kind of lacks basic instincts and basic reflexes. So we have to teach those to him manually, which takes so much longer. But he's achieved every one of those milestones thus far. Like, he hasn't necessarily plateaued, which gives me a lot of encouragement. that, you know, like up until this point, it's our biggest concern has been toilet training.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's slowly getting there, but he's making progress month after month. And changing a dirty 8-year-old diaper is really not fun.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, I'm changing those diapers a little less. It's just taking us a lot longer. So it's teaching me to just hold out hope and be a little bit more patient.
Yeah. Yeah. That's with, I'm not going to refer to Angelman syndrome through this whole episode, but the similarity is that that's like a life goal, is to get them potty trained. And so, yeah, I know all about changing diapers on a 13-year-old.
Yeah. It's no joke. And, you know, you go out in public and I hear some moms complain, oh, this restaurant didn't have diaper changing stations for my kid. And I think, well, that's terrible, but no diaper
changing. You're not lifting your 8-year-old onto a diaper changing station.
Yeah. He's 90 pounds now. Mm. That ain't happening.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, and it sounds disgusting, but like sometimes it's the bathroom floor, because I'm not going to change a stinky diaper in the middle of a restaurant floor. Or sometimes it's outside on the grass, or it's winter. And you know what? The bus just came and he just did something in his pants before the bus came. You know, that happened to us a lot 2 years ago. And it's just, it's 30 degrees outside and we're just changing his bum on the cement. Like, you just kind of have to make it work.
Yeah, you really are queen of last minute make it work, aren't you?
Yeah.
I see why. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I was going to say, but what an exciting thing that you're still seeing progress, you know, because you probably will get to a point where he plateaus and you'll have to, you know, wrap your mind around that. But the fact that there's any progress at all has to be pretty exciting.
It's really exciting because, well, there's this thing that happens, you know, as you find out, or as you're coming to grips and really understanding that your child has special needs, you have to, it's kind of a mourning process where you mourn the loss of your prior expectations. And I never thought that I was one of those moms who's like, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. But there are certain milestones that I have kind of had to let go of. And as Felix has grown and developed, I realize, yeah, those have been let, you know, I've let go of those milestones, like, you know, perhaps getting married and having family of his own. But there's a possibility there. Like, it's not, I don't have to completely bury it. But he may, you know, he may live on his own. He may have some adventures of his own, just on his own terms. And so it's nice to have that window of opportunity still open a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That progress tells you that you just don't know what he'll be capable of. So just wait and see. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of brings us, you know, back to those early days and years. To our next question is, when did you know that he was going to be different?
Well, I think I knew when we had his first ultrasound, when he was 20 weeks in utero, and the nurse, she paused when she did the ultrasound of the brain. She was measuring on the brain. And his ventricle was just slightly outside of the range of normal. And, you know, you're looking at an ultrasound screen. Like, they're measuring in, like, millimeters, and it's outside the range of normal on an ultrasound screen? Like, how accurate is it? So, you know, I had my skepticism there, but I feel like that was kind of a foreshadowing of what was to come. And I just kind of buried it down and I didn't necessarily address it. And, you know, I buried it down with good reason because, you know, that triggered some alarms with my OBGYN, and she wanted me to, like, go into genetic counseling. They wanted me to do an amniocentesis, which I am very much personally against an amniocentesis. It doesn't work for me because that puts the baby at risk. And, you know, and I had this conversation with the doctor. I said, okay, so what's the purpose of the amniocentesis? And basically they didn't come out write and say it, but like there was nothing to do about any sort of genetic disorder, if he had a genetic disorder, besides terminate the pregnancy. And for me, that's never been an option. And I didn't like where that, like the medical industry was kind of taking me. They were covering their butts. I totally understand it. But that was difficult. It was really difficult. And so I just kind of shoved everything down. I didn't want to address any of that emotionally, for sure. And then he was a year old and he wasn't sitting up. He was rolling over and that was it. He didn't have any other milestones. And I took him into the pediatrician's office and he has a large head. But my husband also has an extremely large head and my side of the family have really big heads. So it's not like, oh my gosh, this is hydrocephaly 100%. He's just has a big head. So, at first it was like, oh, he has such a big head. He's such a big kid. And at that year mark, the nurse practitioner had no excuses. And she kind of had a freak out on me, which was extremely unprofessional in my opinion. And she's like, you need to get an MRI. You need to do all this imaging. And she just kind of shoved me back into that testing and screenings and genetic counseling and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nope, I can't deal with this right now. So we found another professional who said, okay, let's get him into early intervention. If he's not making progress, then we'll slowly ramp things up from there. Clearly you're an overwhelmed mother. Yes.
Yeah.
Right on the nose. So that's kind of the path that we've taken. We've done some testing. Everything's come back negative. And dealing with the medical industry, insurance and appointments and, all that stuff, it's exhausting. And I don't have any patience for it. So I'm grateful that whatever it is that Felix has not affected his health. He's healthy as a horse. It's just affected his development. So that's kind of where we are with him.
Okay. So my question is, does a lack of like a conclusive diagnosis, does that bother you? Did it bother you?
It bothers me.
Yeah.
And like my husband and I are very unified front, except when it comes to Felix's medical decisions. That's where we just disagree. And we've had discussions about this time and time again. And ultimately what it boils down to is Felix does qualify for the services that he gets through the state because of his developmental delay, because it affects his development so much. That he qualifies for a large part of assistance, which is fabulous. A diagnosis could potentially harm our family because my husband, he was working freelance and he hopes to be working freelance again. So private insurance is a struggle if you have a diagnosis. So considering that he has no health ailments, like there are so many factors that have kind of come into play. And I think ultimately I am now at peace with him not necessarily having a diagnosis because there are benefits and drawbacks to having that. Without him having a label, he's not put into any one box. So that kind of helps us push him further to do things, to read, to do math, to do these things where if he had a diagnosis, maybe they say, oh, he wouldn't ever, do those things. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. I would imagine so. But that's an interesting point that you bring up that, if he were already classified as X, Y, or Z, they'd say, oh, those kids can't ever this, and might never allow him to get to that point. Whereas now he's an open book. Like he could be whatever, So yeah. I guess that's the good side of it, but that it's got to be frustrating.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you're at peace with it now, like you have acceptance, but tell us, like, what did your path to acceptance look like? And do you, like, do you still struggle, even though you have acceptance, do you still struggle with grief sometimes?
For sure. I think the worst thing that I did when I really was cluing myself into the fact that Felix was atypical was play the what if game. And, you know, what if, you know, I had two different due dates that were almost a month apart. What if they had actually induced me to my original due date rather than my modified due date? What if I had eaten something differently? What if I, you know, and so then I try to play the blame game. Yeah. And then I try to think about Felix without his disabilities. And then I become ungrateful. And then I have, like, and there's nothing you can do about the past. Like, the past is the past. Whether or not, you know, anyone is to blame. Felix is Felix now. And one of the things that my husband said to me when I was really struggling, you know, I struggle with depression too, so that doesn't help. But when I was struggling with Felix and his diagnosis and feeling all the guilt in the world that I wasn't doing what I could for him, he said, well, is Felix upset? Does he hate his life? I said, no. He's probably one of the happiest kids you'll meet. Is this your problem or his problem? It's his problem. And he's mad about it. No. So why are you kicking yourself about this? He's Felix. So that really helped me turn my focus around from what if to now what, and working on, you know, the blessings that Felix has and that he provides our family as a whole. It took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
And it was painful.
Yeah. That is so, so beautiful what your husband guided you through there. And I, you know, your energies are much better spent on the now what than the what ifs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. It's a hard place, and it's difficult as mothers. I feel like we all, play the what if game at one point or another, and it's not healthy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so circling back around, just like our first two questions that we asked you about motherhood, we want to phrase these, but in the context of having a special needs kid. So what sort of strengths and opportunities do you think that you've been given or discovered because you have a special kid like Felix?
You know, we're in a digital era where people don't really leave their phones. And it's kind of hard to meet new people, to talk to people. And Felix is like the ultimate icebreaker, man. He'll just go up to people and he'll just say, Black Panther, my favorite. And he'll just like start a conversation and just, he can break down walls. And he really has this ability to, well, he's just a tender soul. He's a cuddler. So, and sometimes when he gets really upset and frustrated and up in a bother, which he has been a lot lately, 90% of the time what he needs is a hug. And that's not necessarily my instinct reaction. But he just kind of knows how to calm people down. And he's just like, he always puts a smile on people's faces. He just has the funniest things, and he like, we don't even have Fortnite, the game, but apparently he knows Fortnite dances, and so he'll just like go up to people and be like, check out my Fortnite dance, and he'll just like bust into this Fortnite dance. And he has zero inhibitions, and I think that that's something that I can aspire to. Because I get in my own little bubble and I become more of a hermit than I used to be. And, you know, he really has forced our family out of bubbles. Like, we go to the grocery store and we're getting out of the car, and he just, like, sees another family getting out of their car. So he just goes right up to him. Hi, my name's Felix. Okay, dude.
See, I love that the strength that you chose is one of his strengths. It's not that, you know, you develop all these things because life is so hard, but rather that you're choosing to see these awesome things that he does better than you do. And I think, yeah. I think we can all do that with our kids. Frankly, my kids have a ton to teach me and I'm a slow learner.
Right.
Yeah. So tell us, what do you still struggle with in regards to Felix and his needs?
Toilet training is still a struggle because he's not, he doesn't initiate going to the bathroom and he fights me. He loves saying no to me. He's very compliant to other, to strangers, which is terrifying. the other struggle that we have is he's a runner. And that is possibly the most terrifying thing that I've experienced as a mother. He just, we call him the backyard bandit in the summertime. Usually he goes, he just like leaves the house and he goes through other people's backyards, trying all their back doors.
Oh my gosh.
Or their garages. And he'll walk into their houses totally uninhibited. He walks into their houses, goes straight to the basement because apparently everyone has toys in the basement.
Aww.
So he goes into the basement and in search for toys and he finds them. He has a nose for them. And, you know, we never know where he's going to be. He has his like little haunts, but, and because we live up on a mountain, trackers are difficult because we have bad cell signal.
Uh-huh.
And so on his, well, the day before his 8th birthday was probably the worst. It was February and cold and it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon and he was putting on his boots. I said, hold on a minute, Felix. And then he darts. He's the most uncoordinated kid, but when he wants to run away, he's a ninja. It's just crazy. So he bolts and I'm like, okay, great. Let's go find Felix. We get like, I do my like regular loop around the neighborhood. Can't find him. Text ladies from church, text a couple of like friends and neighbors. And like 20 minutes in, I can't find him. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the middle of winter. And we have 5-foot snow drifts everywhere. So he could just dart out from behind one of those snowdrifts and get killed by a car, you know?
Yeah.
So I worry about that. So I call the cops. I don't call the cops every time he runs away. Like, if I called them every time, I'd be calling, no, like, a few times, yeah, a week. And right, they'd hate me. But so I call the cops, report missing persons. And I guess apparently they were doing a shift change. So the person who was supposed to relay the message, there is a missing child, didn't relay the message to the police. So I'm like, we're looking. Chris is home from work. He's looking. We're kind of going a little bit nuts. And I'm like, I haven't heard from the cops. Like, it was 3:50 in the afternoon. And you know, the sun sets at 4:20 in Utah in the winter. Like, oh, we had 30 minutes to find him before it got dark. Hmm. And I, you know, and I'm like, 2 hours in, this is scary. And so I call the cops again. And like within 5 minutes, they were at our house helping looking. And they were arranging for search and rescue to bring their helicopters in.
Oh my gosh.
When somebody called the cops and said, hey, I found this boy. He's having soda at my house. I'm like,
why'd it take you two hours to call?
Right? Like, come on. How does this even happen? And, you know, of course, in Felix's point of view, he gets soda and a candy bar from these strangers. And then he gets a ride home in a cop car. Like, oh my gosh. Like, yes, the best day. And of course, it's like, it's his birthday the next day. So we have like cake and ice cream. He's like, this was my birthday present.
How and far away, like, was he?
He was about 3/4 of a mile away. Yeah. So it's just like, that's the biggest struggle that I have. It's just him running away. And, he's terrible at crossing streets and looking both ways before he crosses. He has very slow reaction times. And so I'm just like, dude.
You're killing me, kid.
Yeah. We live in a quiet neighborhood, thankfully. So it's not like people are going 60 miles an hour up and down our street. But it concerns me when we have 5-foot snow drifts.
Yeah, seriously. I have to say that when you talk about him sneaking into people's houses, going in the basement, my husband has a hilarious story about his sister. His sister has Down syndrome, and she was known for the same thing. She would go to she would usually go to people's houses that they knew and try to find a way in. And one time, some friends of theirs weren't even home. She snuck in, was in the basement, I think playing a set of drums or something. And they came in the house and were like, what's that sound? Is there an intruder? Yeah, of course. She was like, yeah, 8 or 9. And they're like, Katie, are you supposed to be here? Does your mom know where you are?
Oh, my word.
Sounds like a pretty common thing. I guess they all know basements are where the fun stuff happens or something.
Right? I honestly think that's the key to life, man. Finding where the toys are at.
The cool, cool basement. Okay, so moving on, we want to hear a little bit about your daughters and find out what their needs are, or, you know, how they deal with being the kids that require less attention. That's always been one of my concerns if I have a special needs kids, is how do the other kids deal?
June is Felix's best friend. They are, I mean, effectively, developmentally, they're twins right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
June is starting to, like, develop a little bit more than him. But they really are BFFs. So the biggest struggle is, like, it's Penelope and then it's the two kids. And sometimes I catch myself talking to Penelope. I'm like, oh yeah, I've got to get the kids to bed. Like, you're one of the kids. You know, like, cause Penelope's 11 and these two are basically 4. There's a 7-year gap developmentally. So yeah. Penelope kind of gets, she's kind of on her own a little bit. And I think that's a struggle that she deals with for sure. And we dealt with some academic struggles with her. And I think a lot of it really has stemmed from her need for attention and validation. And we've made some great progress. So what we've done for Penelope, Chris wakes her up at 6 o'clock in the morning, every morning, and works with her on homework or projects. It's projects in the summer or homework in the winter. So I don't do homework with her anymore, which has been a huge blessing because it was like 2 hours in the afternoon and she wants to be playing with friends or on, you know, playing a game on the computer or, you know, any number of things. And we're stuck doing homework. So now she does it with Chris, and it's just their time together. Nobody else comes in, and she gets that one-on-one every day with Chris.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I feel like girls need that from their dads. Mm-hmm. Definitely, especially at this preteen, tween stage in their lives. So that's been a big breakthrough for us, that she's gotten the attention that she needs. Some of it, she needs more. And then in the summers, she goes to grandma camp. She does anywhere between 2 weeks and a month with my mother-in-law, and they are buddies. My mother-in-law speaks Penelope fluently, and she's taught her how to swim. She's taught her how to just, like, do kind of scary things. Like, they go zip lining and hiking and like rafting down the river and doing these like adventurous things that I don't know that Penelope would want to do with me. She doesn't listen to me very well. And not that she doesn't, I don't know. She just, that's how her personality has been since the day she was born. She doesn't listen to me. So that, I feel like, really helps kind of fill her reservoir throughout the year, having that one-on-one time with her grandma, where she gets to just kind of do anything.
Oh, that's really neat.
So as June gets older, though, I don't I don't know what her needs are going to be specifically, because she will eventually develop beyond where Felix will be. And I hope that they still maintain a closeness and a friendship that they've had. But, you know, I can't tell the future.
Yeah, and you wonder if that's going to change your family dynamic a little bit once Felix developmentally is the youngest kid, you know?
Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. And you're right. I think that June will have totally different needs, because she's not the oldest, and yet she's not really the youngest, or won't be eventually, you know, developmentally. So that's an interesting thing. Okay. So, one question that I'm always curious about is, what do you, as a mom of a special needs kid, wish that everyone around you knew about him? So when you go to the grocery store, strangers, or people at church that maybe don't know the scenario, what's the most frustrating part about people not knowing your kid?
I think, not every kid is autistic. Oh. That's one thing that really, I don't know why it bothers me. I have friends with autistic kids. I love them. They're great. But for some reason, when somebody asks my child about his special needs, they automatically ask, does he have autism? And I think that's their way of connecting and trying to understand what Felix really is. Right. You know, what his prognosis is, how to engage with him. But I kind of resent that a little bit. I'm like, no, he doesn't have autism. He doesn't have a diagnosis, man.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that goes back to like my initial argument banter with my husband trying to figure out a diagnosis. But I think the other thing is, don't be afraid of him. There are some people that really lean in to Felix and what he's doing, and man, those people, I will go to the ends of the earth for them, because if you engage in a positive way with my son, you have my heart 100%. But there are some people that just, I don't know that they have experience with special needs people in general. So how to interact, what to talk about, you know, how do you even exchange niceties with him? And ultimately, I feel like just give him a high five, man, and you'll just make his world.
Yeah, and I feel like every special needs kid has different needs, right? And different, you know, developmental level, or what they're comfortable with physically and emotionally and everything else. And so it always takes a little bit of time of interaction to know what a kid needs. But yeah, those people who go out of their way to try to figure it out, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit different take on the same question. What would you tell moms, other moms, how to educate their kids about Felix, or about other special need kids in general? Because sometimes a kid's first reaction is fear when they see another kid that's not behaving like they do.
Yeah. I think questions are okay. I think that's really the biggest takeaway, is that questions are okay. If you're not sure how to approach a kid, ask. Because some kids, they need more personal boundaries than others. Some kids may be like physically quite fragile. Other kids may not necessarily be verbal. So it's really, I think it's asking how to engage and just trying to get on their level. There's a book called When Charlie Met Emma. It was written by Amy Webb and illustrated by Marilee Lydiard. And it's a darling book about limb differences, but I feel like the same can be used for kids like Felix that have some kind of developmental disability, really any kind of disability. And just like reading that to your kids and having them understand that, you know, while they may not necessarily be exposed to kids with, you know, different abilities or special needs on the regular, that it's okay to engage with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
I feel kind of lucky that, so my great grand, or not, sorry, not great grandfather, great uncle. So my grandmother's youngest brother, he had Down syndrome, and he lived to be 53, which was quite old for Down syndrome. And I have lots of great memories of him. He passed away when I was 14, and I was able to really learn how to engage with him. And I remember feeling outside of my comfort zone with my great uncle, and he was family and we'd see him often. But I feel like that was a really good learning experience for me as a child to engage with somebody who was different than me. He was blind eventually. Developmentally, he was about like 5 or 6. But that was kind of a good little learning experience for me.
Okay, so now we want to switch gears a little bit and have you tell us about your self-care routine. So what do you do when everything's overwhelming and you feel underqualified? Because you have to be in the best version of you to be able to meet your kids' needs.
I joke around that my love language is quality time alone.
Is it every mother's?
yeah. One year for my birthday, Chris gave me 5 days at home alone.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine?
That's amazing.
It was incredible.
Two mothers who are never home alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like one thing to like have a weekend in a hotel room.
Right.
No, at your house. Being home alone at home. Oh, it was amazing. So for me, a lot of it is just time to like reset. And oftentimes that's alone. I bike a lot. I'm biking between 5 and 6 days a week for about an hour each day. And
cool.
It's fun. We live in a neighborhood where I can do some serious road riding and not really encounter much traffic, and then lots and lots and lots of mountain biking trails. So I get to do both, just going out my front door.
Yeah.
So there's very little barrier to me getting outside and doing things. So Chris loves biking too. He's an avid biker. And him seeing me get into biking, he's like, oh, I'm going to do anything to support this habit of yours. I want to see you get out there. So, you know, having a supportive, significant other makes a huge difference. And, you know, being able to be creative with our schedule so that I have time to get out almost daily, even just for like a walk for 15 minutes, really makes a huge difference in my mental state. I am one who tends to like go into negative self-talk loops. Depression just kind of does that to you. And biking and getting outside are those times when I get outside of that negative self-talk loop. I'm thinking about, oh, there's a rock, let's miss that. Oh, there's this berm, let's hit that. Or let's hit this jump or whatever. And so I'm thinking in a can-do, positive, oh yes, I hit that attitude rather than, you know, I can't.
Yeah, that is so awesome that you have figured out. Yeah, exactly. How to, what you need for you and that you make sure to take care of that. That's so important.
Yeah, and then in kind of related to that, I would ask where you go to feel validated. So, you know, if you need to talk over some of these issues, you know, do you have, is it always your husband? Is it their support group or a therapist or something? What's your favorite place to go and talk it out?
I have a couple of friends with kids with special needs, and that definitely helps put things into perspective, just because sometimes our problems seem so big when they're really like, it's a little milestone or something, you know, that's really insignificant. So talking to other moms, not having a diagnosis can be a problem because I can't talk to other moms that have kids like Felix.
Right. Yeah.
But I do know other moms, and you know, Felix does have some similar hangups to like autism and CDLS and all these, like there are kind of these crossovers where we can talk a lot and empathize with each other, which is really helpful. I'll talk to Chris when I'm just in over my head. I mean, Felix is 90 pounds. He's a lot to manhandle.
Yeah.
You know, so I get tired and Chris is a really good supporter. I go to therapy. It's been a while since I've gone. I should probably go. But therapy really has helped a lot. It's helped me put things into perspective 100%. And then just getting outside of my home bubble and talking to other moms, just being social really helps get that validation and help me get into a better headspace.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine with a kid with serious developmental delays, you still go through, you know, the vast majority of what you go through is often things that other moms can relate to, just maybe not at age 8, right? Like we all know what it's like to lose a child and be terrified. We all know what it's like to deal with diapers and that sort of thing. So I feel like, yeah, sometimes we just need to talk to anybody who knows what it's like to have a kid that is pushing you past your limits. Yours might look a little bit differently, but that can be so valuable. And it's part of the reason we talk about our funny mom moments on here. So everyone knows they're not the only one swimming in poop.
Seriously.
We want to wrap up with asking you, what's your biggest worry for Felix's future? And also, what's your biggest wish?
So my wish is that his life strength, being a kid forever, remains a strength and not a weakness for him. That's one of my wishes for him. You know, if he ends up being developmentally only 8 years old for the rest of his life, I really hope he has as much fun as an 8-year-old for the rest of his life.
That is,
you know,
so beautiful.
He kind of has that special gift. He doesn't have to grow up.
Yeah.
I don't want him to grow up if he doesn't developmentally grow up. So that is also my worry. Like, I don't, you know, I feel like I believe in God and I feel like God has really greatly blessed our family financially so that we've been able to support our son. And I hope that he continues to bless us with that capacity to support our son and our daughters as well in the long term so that Felix can stay with us forever. Again, if that is developmentally where he ends up being. I hope that his sisters, if they have to take over care for Felix, that they will do so the way that my grandma took care of her brother. My great grandmother had a Down syndrome kid in an era when you sent them to a facility and they were a ward of the state for the rest of their lives. They were no longer, people didn't visit their kids. They were just like tossed aside. Yeah. And that was against everything that my great grandmother believed in. And she was a good advocate for her son. And in turn, her other children were great advocates for their brother. And I really hope that that's the case for my son, that he has the advocates that he needs in his life to take care of him when I'm not there.
Yeah, I could definitely see that one of the biggest worries would be what happens when or if you can't care for him, right?
Yeah.
I see that in other families with special needs kids, that the siblings develop a really, really special bond. And it's not the same as if their sibling didn't have special needs, but they do develop, in the family that I was a nanny with, they develop a very protective and close and loving relationships. And that goes, you know, extended life. I'm sure you said that you see that with your grandma, and I'm sure Bonnie, you see that with your husband and his sibling and all that. There just develops this protective, special caring. So I, you know, that's something positive that you can encourage in your kids as they grow up. And I'm sure they'll continue that too.
I hope so, for sure. I worry because Penelope doesn't really like Felix very much right now.
Yeah, but she's 11.
Yeah, she's 11.
That might just be 11 too. Yeah,
I shouldn't be so hard on her.
She wouldn't necessarily like him if he was normal and she was 11 and he was 8.
That is a very excellent point.
Especially a pesky little brother, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so to wrap up, we just wanted to ask you if you have any special recommendations for other moms with special kids or for the general public that's hoping to understand special needs kids a little bit better. You mentioned the one book, When Charlie Met Emma, was that right?
Yeah. So that book is great. So the author, Amy Webb, she's this little Miggy on Instagram.
Oh, and yeah.
She does special needs spotlights, which are awesome. And also special books by special kids. It's on Instagram, and then it's a channel on YouTube. And oh my gosh, like my heart melts every time I see them post. Because it's, I think it's like this guy and his girlfriend that go around and interview special needs people or differently abled people. And it gives you insight to people who look very different or who have very different health issues. And it's just, it's such a tender series and it's great. I love watching it with my kids so they can have that exposure with other people and like understand that like not everybody looks the same, not everyone talks the same. And, you know, and we still struggle that even with a child like Felix, my two girls still struggle that like if somebody doesn't look the same, they kind of point it out and it drives me nuts. So I feel like that's a really great resource for any parent. And then for moms with kids with special needs, if you're just kind of starting your journey, you just got to be easy on yourself. Like, you just can't be so hard on yourself because it is the hardest job to be an advocate, especially when you're trying to figure out a diagnosis and you're navigating the medical industry and doctors and nurses. And, you know, they are all there to help their patients. I'm not like, you know, talking down about the medical industry. There have been so many great medical advances, but it can be so overwhelming to be a mom and to be a medical advocate for your child. So just be easy on yourself and take a break if you can.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice.
And can you tell our listeners where to find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me. I'm most active on Instagram. I'm at Melissafer, 1L, 2 S's. It's like Melissa and calligrapher made a baby. Melissafer, yeah. Search Melissa Esplin, that also works. Or calligraphy.org. I teach calligraphy online and occasionally in person in Utah, if you happen to be in Utah.
Yes, look her up. Her stuff is beautiful.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here, Melissa. We've had a great time chatting with you.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you've enjoyed this episode, we'd be so grateful if you'd leave us a written review on iTunes.
If you have any questions or ideas for future episodes, you can reach us at outnumberthepodcast@gmail.com and find us on Instagram @outnumberthepodcast.
See you next week.